Welcome back, everybody, to the Gaming Careers Podcast, a weekly live stream where we cover all of the different news and live streaming content creation industry news. On today's episode, we'll be chatting, of course, about Ludwig moving away from streaming from Twitch to YouTube and the reasons behind his move. We'll, of course, have all of the Twitch and YouTube platform updates that you need to know about. We're even going to cover the controversy behind MrBeast's Squid Game video. But for any new watchers and listeners, this is a live show that we do every single Monday here on YouTube. So please do feel free to join in the chat. Let us know your thoughts on the topics that we're discussing. And if you haven't yet hit that like button, please do hit that. Helps spread this show out to more people. Good morning, afternoon, evening to everybody that's watching live, depending on where you are in the world. Do let us know in the chat where you're tuning in from as I hand this over to Ben to ask. Ben, we're officially in December now, first podcast in December. We're both wearing warm hoodies, of course. Have you bought a hot drink for the show today?
I have, yeah. After my week off of coffee, this is my day back to coffee, and it's never tasted so good. So yeah, we got the hoodies, the coffee. It's December. I've got my setup kind of holidays out, so very excited. Yeah. Did you have a good couple weeks there, Pete?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I'm going to leave the camera on you just to show off the Christmas lights in the background. I have to describe this for the podcast audio listeners, but Ben clearly has the better background setup. He's got snowflakes falling on the TV behind him. This guy has four different seasons to his stream every year. So I've clearly got to up my game. But yeah, we've had quite a lot go on over the past week that we weren't around. I think it was Thanksgiving for you guys over in the States last weekend. So happy Thanksgiving to anybody listening from over there. You've all celebrated and eaten enough turkey for the year. Where do you want to start, Ben, this week? Maybe makes sense to cover the platform updates first.
Yeah, I feel like we can always talk about the updates for Twitch, YouTube, and Facebook if they do their platform updates. Starting off, we have updates from Twitch, which I feel like we always have updates from Twitch, which is nice. The first one that I saw that I think is probably the most interesting to talk about is Twitch is adding a ban evasion moderation tool powered by machine learning, which will show you in chat what the system thinks to be suspicious users, which I guess means people who are specifically trying to avoid a ban, essentially, by creating a second account or otherwise trying to get around that. So really interesting to me. The little GIF they have here on Twitter is pretty cool, how it shows it basically automatically kind of call out a specific user that looks suspicious. And you can monitor that person, keep an eye on that person, which is pretty cool. Not something I think people were asking for specifically, but definitely a nice safety feature. So I don't have anything really bad to say about this one, Pete. What about you?
Yeah, they can't really share too many details about how this works, because obviously then it would help these people trying to evade bans get around it. I'd like to know a little bit more about how it works. I don't know if you know any more about how it works. Is it just, you know, new users joining in chat that haven't spoken before, or same IP addresses and things like that? But what do you actually get to see when you click that little button saying, you know, manage suspicious user and monitor them?
Yeah, so they have a blog post kind of going through a bit more of the detail here for how it's identifying the evaders. Again, it doesn't really give all the info, but just kind of tells you that they identify people as likely or possible ban evaders. If you read through the attached blog post a little bit, I haven't seen this live yet. I've been streaming for, let's see, this got announced on the 30th. So I've streamed for about a week and I've not seen this been used yet. I would love to hear people in chat have seen this on their streams or mods on those channels if you've seen this, but so far I've not seen it come through.
Yeah, I think it's probably one of the updates that they've talked about and it slowly gets released whilst they check for bugs and things. But definitely, you know, positive change. I think this year has been filled with spam bots and hate raids and all those kind of things. And Twitch actually has responded, I think, pretty well overall in terms of building features and helping streamers have more tools at their disposal to be able to moderate users and chat and raids and things like that. And now you've got all those options that we could in the podcast of choosing, you know, how long users have to have followed your channel before they can chat, or they need to have a mobile number attached to their account. So much customization there for the streamers, really. And this is just another tool in their belt.
Yeah, I think it's very cool. So good to see that from Twitch. And any more safety changes are definitely encouraged. There were a couple other, I guess really one other interesting change that got leaked today or added today. And that is that there's some more tags being added for Twitch. Not too many, though, from what I've seen. There's a whole list, it looks like, of the documentation that Zach has on here of over the time, the new ad tags that have come on here. But some of the new ones that we have today are world building, multiple sclerosis recovery, Haskell, and Satanist are the new ones that I've seen. Plus a couple other console tags, which are kind of useful. But I did see the Satanist tag get a bit of discussion on Twitter feed. I don't know if you saw that as well.
Yeah, I did. I think firstly, to cover the console tags, this is obviously useful for all of the retro gamers out there that want to be able to tag that they're playing on a NES or N64 or whatever. But then, yeah, the next tweet that came out, I think either a few hours later or the next day, was that they'd added the Satanist tag, which I thought was interesting. I haven't seen a lot of demand for that, but maybe I'm just not watching the right streams on Twitch. But nonetheless, Twitch adding a whole bunch of new tags for streamers. So they, you know, we see a lot of platforms moving away from using tags. YouTube even says now that you don't really need to fill out the tags. They have a better understanding just from transcribing your video as to what your video is about. But obviously Twitch has the problem with discoverability, and one of the ways that they've aimed to solve that is through giving streamers more ways of defining what their stream is about. So more tags is always useful, but even if this only helps one person listening to the podcast that is a satanic N64 streamer, well, there you go. You've got the tags to be able to put that show together now.
Both at the same time. I mean, the console ones are cool. I think that's a request that I've seen for a long time for the retro community, especially to help kind of niche yourself down. I did see a funny reply from Co to the Satanist tag, saying, I guess he's wanted an interactive tag, Co Carnage, for months and has not gotten that, but Satanist got added before the interactive one. So poor Co, even as an ambassador trying to get some tags added, it's an uphill battle, it seems.
Yeah, I saw that too. Twitch isn't the only platform that's added updates this week. We've also seen YouTube release something that I think is quite cool. Obviously, I'm a bit more of a YouTube nerd than a Twitch nerd. An experimental feature, and usually this is always how they roll out features, that they sort of talk about it on their Creator Insider channel, and then it slowly gets rolled out if it's successful and changes get made along the way. But a way of being able to find out what your viewers are searching for and where there are gaps in your content. So really, previously people have used tools like TubeBuddy to be able to do this. But now they are going to be building out a way of doing this directly from your sort of analytics. You can see like the keywords. So this is an example on the Creator Insider channel. So their channel is all about YouTube. So their keywords are a YouTube channel, how to create a YouTube channel, how to hide subscribers on YouTube. These are things that their audiences are searching for, and there are gaps in their content that you could maybe then use to create videos. I'm going to shout out Gaming Careers editor Defrag, who is an awesome YouTuber himself, created a video sort of covering this whole update. So I'll leave that link down in the show notes. It's only 3:40, but it goes over exactly what is going on and the best bits that you can apply from the learning from the Creator Insider video, which I'll also leave linked down below, where this was actually announced. That's also well worth subscribing to that channel, because as I said, that's where I get all of my updates about YouTube. It's kind of their official way of talking about platform updates, similar to Twitch, how they do it through a blog post. So yeah, I think it's kind of cool because plenty of YouTubers run out of ideas or run out of ways of being able to generate ideas instead of just looking through comments and seeing what people are asking for in Discord. This is a way that actually sort of uses, I guess, the YouTube's algorithm to work out what their audiences are looking for. So could definitely be pretty useful.
Yeah, I'm super excited about this one because I love the TubeBuddy feature, the search for keywords like that. And this is coming straight from YouTube. So, you know, you have the most accurate way to do it. Plus, it's for your own viewers and across YouTube. So you've got those two different buckets to look into. Do you know when this actually comes out? Because after watching Defrag's video, I tried to go use it and realized that it's not actually available to me yet. So I don't know if it's rolling out in waves or something, but I couldn't find a launch date when I looked around for it. Did you see one?
I'll swap off my screen share, and whilst we're talking, I'll have a quick look to see if I can find it in my analytics dashboard yet, because it could be one of those things that is rolling out. No, it doesn't look like it's in mine yet either. So must be rolling out maybe country by country, or it's just something that they're testing internally for now. But they're usually pretty quick once they announce things on the Creator Insider channel to actually rolling that out. So I would expect it to be in the next few weeks, certainly before next year.
Yeah, I'll definitely use that when it comes out. I think especially for growing YouTube channels, it's nice to have searchable tags to go after versus using your existing audience essentially to kind of kickstart a video. So I'll definitely be using that when that comes out for the most part. I think that was most of the YouTube updates that we saw for this week. But speaking of YouTube, we didn't have a chance to talk about this since the last podcast, but I think the biggest video of the year, right? I think it's safe to say, has come out in the meantime, which, as everyone here I'm sure knows, is Mr. Beast's Squid Game video. I haven't even looked at the stats, Pete. What are the most recent stats on how that video is doing these days?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a lot of controversy around this video, and we're gonna dive into a bit of that here. I know that Mr. Beast isn't a streamer, but since this podcast is streamers and content creators, I think this was such a monumental video for various reasons, and there was so much discussion about this on Twitter. I think he posted the video on Friday before Thanksgiving weekend, and it seemed like nobody was actually celebrating Thanksgiving. Everyone was just sat on their phones tweeting about it, because I just saw so many tweets and videos and reaction streams and things like that, and articles about the pros and cons of it. But for those of you that haven't watched it, basically Mr. Beast, who's an incredibly successful YouTuber, does all of these like huge production videos, recreated Squid Game, which is a popular Netflix show. I can't believe I would have to describe that to anybody. You must have at least heard of it. But some stats from his video: it hit 1 million views in just 9 minutes. It generated 1.4 million new subscribers for Mr. Beast in a single day, which is the record. And the sponsor for the video, because I think it cost $3.5 million to make, which was a company called Brawl Stars, who make like a free game for your iPhone, I think probably for Android as well. That app hit number 2 on the App Store in the free games category, up from number 41, which is where it was before video release. So from those stats, Ben, an incredibly successful video. You can't imagine why anyone would say anything negative about it, but 1 million views in 9 minutes. I mean, that is unreal. And then 1.4 million new subs in a single day almost makes spending 3.5 million worth it, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, when you add up the revenue, it's got to get close to that, right? With Brawl Stars too. It's at 150 million views right now, 152 million, I just checked, in a couple of weeks, which is insane compared to the other videos that have been on there probably all year and aren't anywhere close to that number. So it's just crazy to see, like you said, just how much mass discussion there was around this. I saw this being on news stations here locally, like in NC, I saw stations talking about it. Even in Korea, they were talking about this on the news. Like, it's become this worldwide phenomenon of just how big this was. And it's really cool to see all the reactions. One thing he did too was he let anybody make a react video to this. It just said, go for it. And so I saw a bunch of streamers doing their own react videos to this. PewDiePie did one, and a bunch of others too. So he definitely knew how to make the most out of this. When he wanted to do it the right way.
Yeah, there's a lot of lessons you can learn, I think, from Mr. Beast about how he structures his videos, and specifically like how quick and fast paced they are. But not going to get into that here. I think the more important discussion is I guess this all kind of stemmed from a single tweet. And I don't know if you saw this tweet. It's since been deleted, but I managed to find a screenshot of it that went out on Twitter and sort of went viral, which was comparing Mr. Beast's Squid Game with Netflix's. Netflix obviously was the show, and it took the creator of the show 10 years to make, script, and release the show. And I've seen some interviews with him. He went like completely broke in making this show. Like, he had to sell his MacBook, which was $600, even just to keep going on making the show. And then like a lot of people criticizing Mr. Beast for like actually being the kind of person that would put on the show, you know, making people fight for this incredible money. Obviously, Mr. Beast didn't kill the members that didn't win the show, but the tweet was comparing the two shows and how long it took them to hit 100 million views. So Mr. Beast Squid Games video, 103 million views in 4 days. It took just 7 weeks to make. Netflix's Squid Game series, 111 million views in 30 days, and it took 10 years to make. More views, less time, fewer gatekeepers. That's the promise of the creator economy. I get the point that this tweet was trying to make, but it does a pretty horrible job of comparing really what is apples to oranges, I think is what Colin and Samir's video ends up comparing it as, because the view count doesn't really matter here. You're talking about the difference between a 25-minute video, and I think the full summary of Squid Game's series, I think it's 6 episodes and it's like 500 minutes long. Obviously, Squid Game had to be completely scripted. It's a completely new idea. so many cast members in it. There's so many storylines in it. And really, Mr. Beast just takes the one storyline of winning money. And even the winner of the show, you don't know anything about them, what they're going to spend the money on, or anything to do with their story. So it kind of strips all the creativity out of it and just focuses on the games and just recreating the games. So
right,
a really bad comparison. And I think that's really what the majority of people had a problem with. I actually saw way more complaints about this tweet than I did about anything to do with Mr. Beast's recreation of it. It was more to do yep. with this person's tweet trying to make it look like YouTube is the future, just because it took less time and took less time to reach 100 million views, and it took less time to make the show.
Yeah, I mean, I saw a lot of discussion around this too, to your point, and it makes sense why the tweet was deleted, because I pretty much just saw, I would say, 90% disagreement with this overall. But yeah, I mean, Mr. Beast never could have made the video if Squid Game didn't exist as a concept in the first place, with all the storyline and the plot and the whole way to make that video. If that doesn't exist, then Mr. Beast can never make an iteration of that. So I totally agree. I do think that there's the good point that the creator economy is getting huge, and you know, the amount of views and potential in creating stuff is massive. But it doesn't mean we should just write off originals or concepts that are long form video like that on Netflix. And it should be more of like a cycle, kind of like you said, of doing more with that concept than you could have done with just the initial series alone. So yeah. I agree, and it makes sense why the tweet was deleted.
Yeah, I think he just ended up getting a lot of hate, so deleted the tweet. The other thing that doesn't really make sense in terms of the comparison is Netflix is obviously a paid platform. So somebody watching 500 minutes on a paid platform is worth a lot more than YouTube, which is a free platform served by ads, watching a 25-minute video. It kind of, to me, it reminds me of like the TikTok versus YouTube argument. Like, the only thing that I'm really seeing from TikTok or YouTube Shorts or Instagram Reels that people keep talking about is the number of views that people can get. Oh, I hit 1 million views on this TikTok, even though I've only got 300 followers. But the views don't compare to YouTube views, because somebody is watching a 15-second looped video versus somebody sitting down and watching a 25-minute long YouTube video. A view isn't comparable between those two things. And it's exactly the same with a view on YouTube versus a view on a 6-episode or 8-episode or whatever it was series on Netflix. That you just can't compare a view to a view in those aspects. So I understand what the tweet was trying to say, but really poorly executed, and I think rightfully so. It was pretty heavily slated. On the topic still of Mr. Beast's video, though, I would highly, highly recommend, especially the people that are interested in video production, to check out another video that I'll leave linked down in the description, which is a YouTube channel called So Crispy Media, who I actually hadn't heard of before this, but have 2 million subscribers. I have subscribed to them on my YouTube account, don't worry. This is just a private account that I'm using to share my screen. They have a video going through all of the VFX that they did. And I think a lot of people thought that Mr. Beast actually created these super high structures and, you know, for the tug of war and things like that. But a lot of it was done with VFX. I'll leave this muted. But you can see shots like this that this guy's explaining now is done with a blue screen background. And they sort of created all of the games in, I think it was a game engine, maybe Unreal, and were able to like map the camera and track all of the shots to make it look super engaging. And this, I think, is where Mr. Beast probably did improve the quality of his usual videos, because we don't usually see like a huge budget of VFX spent. And I think this was like a team of 20 people helping him do the VFX for this shot. So really, really interesting. If you are interested in learning about, you know, what goes into making a video look as real as Mr. Beast's Squid Game was. And the other video that I mentioned briefly is Colin Samir, literally about 30 minutes before we started streaming this podcast, they released a video called How Mr. Beast Stole Squid Game. And it's a really great like 20-minute summary about the idea of stealing in the creator world. And they recommend reading a book, which I've listened to the audiobook version, called Steal Like an Artist. And it's about this whole theory that everything doesn't have to be created completely from scratch, and everything is an iteration on somebody else's idea, and you only have to change small percentages to be able to make it your own voice. That's a really good video. Again, there's going to be lots of links down in the description, or if you're listening to this, down in the show notes after the show finishes. But I think it's a really interesting topic. The whole video idea from Mr. Beast was definitely taking on more than he had taken on before, and it was probably a bigger budget that he'd ever done before. And I don't particularly mind that he used the video idea from Squid Game. And I know that they have interviewed the creator of Squid Game, and he really liked the fact that Mr. Beast ended up making a video on it, because it just pushed more and more people to watch the show. And Mr. Beast's audience is probably a little bit younger than the majority of people who would watch Squid Game, the show on Netflix. So it has probably made people want to watch the actual original show as well. So all around, apart from the person that tweeted it, I think everybody wins in this scenario. Ben, any last thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, you definitely summed it up nicely there. I think just a crazy video to watch, and it's kind of a milestone for YouTube as a whole. Glad to hear that there's support from the original creator. And I think this could be an indicator of how YouTube and social media can kind of amplify things that are happening on Netflix and Amazon Video and Disney Plus, and just do more with that. Because I guarantee you, like, if Netflix had the opportunity to help, you know, make that a reality for Mr. Beast ahead of time, that would have been a great marketing effort for the series as a whole. So I think we'll see more of that coming in the future with other similar concepts that work from video from Netflix series. So very cool to see. And speaking of Mr. Beast, I think our next topic is also touching on him a little bit, which is 2021's top trending videos and creators. This is a blog post that is on the YouTube side. Pete, have they done this before? I don't think I've seen this last year when we were doing the podcast.
I've seen more and more brands start to do the like Spotify Wrapped type thing. I wish yep. YouTube did it to the same level, where like I actually got personalized stats on my viewing habits on YouTube or my creator habits on YouTube. Because I love diving into the Spotify. I'm an absolute stat nerd. I love seeing what my my top 100 songs are and my favorite genres and things like that. They might have done this before. I agree. We probably would have covered it last year. So if it doesn't ring a bell, maybe they didn't. But yeah, it's a look at sort of top trending videos. Mr. Beast top of that, but not for his Squid Game one. Top creators in the US, Mr. Beast top of that. Breakout creators, top shorts creators. They're really pushing shorts. That's all I see from YouTube's Twitter account is like tweets about shorts and tweets about shorts over and over again. Top music videos. It's a bit annoying that this is all US related, but I guess I wouldn't expect much less being a US based company. But yeah, I'd love to see a bit more personalization and this to be down to the viewer, and seeing, you know, how many hours I spend watching YouTube every year. Maybe I don't want to see that for productivity reasons, but yeah, it's cool. Anything here jump out? It's super surprising.
Not too much. I mean, to your point, it is interesting that they call out shorts specifically, because they really are pushing that. I even saw someone was asking Fwiz about discoverability on YouTube, and his response was, well, we have shorts and things like that. So I mean, they're really trying to push that as a way to grow on YouTube overall now, not just to make shorts, to make other video content too. But I mean, it was a cool thing to see. It's not as detailed, like you said, as Spotify Wrapped or that kind of thing. My initial thought was, is this the replacement for Rewind that they're doing? It's not maybe as interactive as Rewind, but it's still kind of the same feel of like a summary of the year. I don't know. You think that's kind of what they're going for here?
Yeah, it's a good point, because they did announce a couple of months ago that they weren't going to do Rewind anymore. Maybe they could have done Rewind now that they've removed the dislike counter. What's the big risk?
What's the downside?
But yeah, I guess this is maybe a little bit of a replacement for it. It's a lot cheaper for them to do this rather than actually fly all these people out and film them doing weird stunts like jumping out of a plane on Fortnite. But yeah, I guess we'll leave this link down in the description if there's any videos or creators that you haven't heard of. But we're talking about the big names: Mr. Beast, Mark Rober, Dude Perfect, Darman. Like, it's the family friendly names that you see on the trending page all the time. Anyway, next up, we have some data on a topic we covered in the last pod with the Streamlabs drama. And obviously, since then, I've created a video about how you can move away from using Streamlabs Desktop, previously Streamlabs OBS, to OBS Studio, as well as moving away from Streamlabs as your alert provider or donation provider to something like Stream Elements. Commander Root, who sort of builds a lot of tools for the creator economy, like little scripts that help you remove follow bots and things like that, he did some data. So he basically ran some tests, scanned a lot of Twitch channel pages to see where they were linking to in their panels below for donations, and did this scan basically as soon as the announcement of Streamlabs' plagiarism came out, and then ran it again 2 weeks later to see actually how many people are leaving. And it's a disappointingly small number, Ben. I summarized it with a retweet Only 4,000 affiliates and 200 partners have switched from using Streamlabs as their donation/alert provider in the past 2 weeks, according to scans done on channel pages. Obviously, there's no way of knowing how many people have moved away from using Streamlabs OBS, now called Streamlabs Desktop, to OBS Studio, but I would hope that would be a much larger number, because that's a much easier transition to do, I think. You don't have to fiddle around with too much. There's sort of, as I explained in the video, there's ways of being able to export and import your scene collections and move settings across and things like that. But I was surprised that it was this low, especially considering how much noise there was created about the Streamlabs plagiarism. We saw all kinds of people saying that they were going to move across. And, you know, 4,000 affiliates and 200 partners might sound like a lot, but as this screenshot shows, we're talking about 4,000 affiliates out of 910,000 affiliates that were using Streamlabs, or even more than that, that were using Streamlabs to start. So a very, very small percentage of people have actually followed through and moved away. So, I mean, I'm glad I created the video and it's done relatively well. And the people that have moved across have found it relatively easy. But is this a case of maybe the streaming community on Twitter just being, you know, all noise and no follow through?
Yeah, I think it's a couple of things. Definitely one is that not everyone knows about this still, even though we talked about it a lot and there was a lot of discussion on Twitter. You know, even when we talked about it on the podcast, there are people who are saying, I didn't hear about this yet. This is the first time hearing of this. So definitely, I would say a chunk of partners and affiliates didn't even hear about the issue. And so they didn't move around in the first place. But to your point, I think the second piece is that a lot of people see this and hear about this and say, yeah, like that's terrible, that's bad. But then don't think about how it applies to them with the tipping piece of it too, not just the actual broadcast software. So people may have moved to OBS, right? But then not actually changing their donation link or their alerts, things like that. And not realizing that's still part of the Streamlabs ecosystem that they should probably change to kind of reinforce that message. So that's my guess, probably those two things combined.
I'm hoping that maybe there's like 25,000 people that have just forgotten to update their Twitch panel and they've actually moved everything over, but people are still donating through their Streamlabs link, not their Stream Elements or a different provider. But I did point that out in the video. So yeah, we'll see. Hopefully people maybe just need Christmas break to be able to have a few days to be able to move everything over, because at the end of the day, I don't want Streamlabs to get away with it completely scot-free. But as seen by these numbers, they're still the number one platform that people use for alerts. And I don't think that's going to change. And maybe just not enough people listening to the Gaming Careers podcast. So, you know, share it with a friend.
Gotta spread the word.
There's always a way to turn this back into promoting our show. Okay, more news in terms of different platforms is Twitter's CEO, Jack Dorsey, is stepping down after 14, 15, 16 years, actually says in the email. This might not seem that interesting to a lot of people, but this guy has literally founded the company and has remained as CEO. I think he's moved around between chairs and exec chairs and then back to CEO again. But it's pretty big news when somebody who built the platform from the ground up steps down and you know, wants to resign from Twitter. And he's posted his email that he sent out to the Twitter organization, to everybody that works there. I'm not going to read the whole thing out because it's quite long, but again, I'll leave it linked in the description down below or the show notes. But really, it seems like the main thing is that he feels the company would be better run with somebody else at the top now, and he's been there for a long time and doesn't want to hold back the company from doing things that they want to do. But what are your thoughts about this? I was just trying to compare this in my head when I was thinking, is this important enough to talk about on the podcast? And then I was thinking, you know, if Emmett Shear did this for Twitch, it would be massive news. And Twitter is Twitter is a much bigger company than Twitch is. So it's definitely worth talking about. And it's obviously a lot of streamers and content creators' main platform outside of either Twitch or YouTube for interacting with their audience. So does this scare you? Any you know, we're going to see cryptocurrency coming to Twitter as soon as Jack Dorsey steps down? Or is this just, you know, handing off to the right person?
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be anything so severe. It is interesting to see. I think he had moved around, like you said, a couple times and even come back to this role in the past. So it was cool to see his whole spelling out in this, like, looks like an email draft that he posted on Twitter, which is interesting. But his thought process is kind of cool to read through, and he really believes in his successor as CEO. The big thing I think that he called attention to was he doesn't think that companies should be founder-led. which is really interesting if you compare it to other companies like Amazon or Tesla or these companies that have really popular figureheads that are very well known. And he thinks that's very limiting and that that shouldn't really be how companies are designed. But it's interesting because I think a lot of other companies are the same way. Like you said, with Twitch and Emmett Shear kind of being like the person at the top. YouTube's got Sarah, I think, and a couple others that are the same way. So Susan. It's just really interesting, I think, to see like a big company talk about that design. I think people will ultimately always gravitate to whoever's at the top as sort of like a figurehead for the company. But I also think it's cool to hear his discussion on that. And I'm curious to see what he does next, essentially, on Twitter. I'm not as invested on Twitter as I am with Twitch or YouTube, but definitely kind of in the same space, like you said, as the other socials as well.
Yeah, I think worth us covering for people that want to know about that. But the main topic this week, from the thumbnail and the title that you've clicked on to watch or listen, is the news of Ludwig. I think this is maybe a week old now. I can't remember exactly what day he moved on.
Always right after the podcast. Yeah, that's when it happens.
It usually is. But what's nice about doing this, you know, after everybody's videos have already gone out, is that we get to see how the first few streams have gone. And that's certainly an interesting point that we can talk about. But yeah, news that Ludwig, who, again, I'm sure doesn't need any introduction, but holds the record for the most concurrent subscribers on the platform, on Twitch, when he did a Summathon, which we covered in great detail. Was that this year? Time is just a medium that I don't track anymore.
The beginning of this year, I think. And we definitely talked about it on the podcast too.
We did. Because it kept going across multiple podcasts, didn't we? We covered it on a podcast and then the next week we're like, well, he's doubled his sub count. We've got to keep covering it. Well, anyway, he has now announced that he's left Twitch to stream exclusively on YouTube. He announced it through like a little short video with some comical moments, such as the very ending where he talks about how effectively YouTube doesn't have the same problems with the MCA, which I thought was interesting and has turned out to be even more interesting. We'll definitely cover that. But we had some tweets from Ryan Fwiz, who again is head of YouTube Gaming, who's been the one that's been spearheading all of these acquisitions from Twitch. And we've now had Ludwig, Dr. Lupo and Tim the Tapman this year. Previously, Courage, JD and Valkyrie. And actually, Courage also has re-signed with YouTube. That was also announced this week. So I think he's been there for 2 years now and announced his re-signing. I summed up this tweet by bragging. I actually wasn't sharing my screen then for anybody that cares about Fwiz's tweet, but I'll bring that back up. But when Dr. Lupo and Tim the Tapman joined YouTube, we had a podcast and we talked about this, didn't we, Ben? And you asked the question, or we asked the question to each other, who's next? Who's the next big figure to join? And I'm not bragging, all right? And there's no points scored.
Uh-huh.
But I called out Ludwig was the kind of creator that YouTube would chase because, you know, he has a big audience already on YouTube. He's brand friendly. You know, I mean, it's not that he doesn't swear, but he has worked with brands successfully. And he has that focus on higher production value, which we know that we've heard from Courage JD and Valkyrie. They've wanted to do things outside of streaming. The contracts, they don't require so much time. So people can focus on, you know, higher production shows for Ludwig, things like Mogul Money, his game show, or tournaments. I know that he's big in the like Smash Bros. Scene. That's actually where he came from. Christmas album, all those kind of things. They require you to spend less time streaming and more time focusing on something of higher production value. So, yeah, 5 points to me for guessing the next big streamer to move across. Maybe we'll have another little bet at the end of this as to who the next streamer's coming across, because apparently they're not done. They're still going to be announcing more streamers, maybe even this year. But I just wanted to make sure that we got that in, Ben, because I know,
very important.
Yeah. I know that you wanted to skip over it for obvious reasons, because I think, who did you call out again?
Nick Merckx. Nick Merckx. Who promptly re-signed with Twitch like right after that. So yeah, I'll eat those words, I guess.
Well, I mean, it's still a good guess because you knew that his time contract was up. But I think like we mentioned in this clip, like YouTube is so incredibly intentional with who they go after. They're not just choosing the biggest streamers on Twitch. They're choosing the people that they know are really pushing the boundaries of streaming and are already working hard on their VOD content strategy. So yeah. What else have we got? Oh, I've highlighted here a little segment in Ludwig's Why I Left Twitch video. Hopefully you let me know, Ben, with a thumbs up if you can hear this when I play it.
And so although I love Twitch, And I always thought of myself as a Twitch guy.
They can on stream. Don't worry.
They're not going to help me make the shit I want to make. I don't feel especially liked, respected, wanted. And I also don't want to do something because it's comfortable.
So yeah, just to summarize for you, Ben, because apparently you couldn't hear, but the stream could. Ludwig sums up some of the reasons why he leaves Twitch. He doesn't want to be comfortable, but really the main reason is he didn't feel particularly loved by Twitch. And I saw some debate on social media as to, you know, whether you need that when you're the top streamer and you're already on the front page the whole time and being recommended to everybody. But I know that he reached out to Twitch and tried to ask for a feature of like limiting how many people could gift subs, because he felt like some people in his community were gifting too many. And they just, you know, said no, because it's making them too much money. And I think he's had the just complete opposite response from YouTube, like Fwiz. And I know that even the CEO is going to jump on his podcast to talk about something. So I think he's had some, you know, really great interactions with YouTube. But it's interesting. I feel like all the streamers that we've seen move across from Twitch to YouTube have kind of had similar reasons. There's the money side of things, which is obviously huge. But even more so than that, it's the less contract hours required to stream and the appeal of having people to talk to about things, like having a contact to be able to talk about. So yep. I've waffled on, Ben.
You're good. No, this has been super interesting because I think more than any move so far, I've seen so much discussion both from Ludwig and other people about the move. So Ludwig did this video, which I think is about 10 minutes long, about his whole thought process and the story of moving over. He also did an interview podcast with a friend talking more about it. And then I've seen, you know, dozens of people make videos about their own thoughts about this and things that relate to that. I saw a clip from Tim watching this, Tim the Tap Man, who pretty much agreed essentially with the way that Ludwig was tweeted or was treated moving over. The story he tells is that basically he came to Twitch and said, we have this offer from YouTube. And Twitch basically said, okay, see ya. Have a good one. And Tim basically said, yeah, same thing happened to me. So really interesting, both for Ludwig, who's a relatively newer creator, and Tim, who's one of like the founding, I would say, members of Twitch streaming. Making that blow up, and just kind of proves that I guess Twitch has to do more with relating to their top creators. I know there's a lot of streamers on Twitch, so it may be a tall order to have like a direct contact for each person, but you'd think for your top, you know, top 10 creators, right, you'd have some sort of higher level of interaction. So it's just really interesting to hear that. And there's a ton to discuss here about why he moved over. Again, ultimately it sounded like the main reason beyond the money, beyond the streaming hours, was just the fact that he felt like YouTube was more responsive and kind of more interactive with things that he wanted to do versus Twitch, who didn't seem very interested in kind of working with him and being interactive. So really interesting to hear that specifically is the biggest reason from him.
Yeah, I wonder how much the Twitch not caring comes from the fact that they, with the previous people that have left, they've come back after the contract is finished. So if we think about Ninja and Shroud, obviously Mixer shutting its doors forced that to happen early. But even this week we've seen with this guy's Toast, who left for Facebook, he's come back to streaming on Twitch. So maybe from Twitch's point of view, they're like, yeah, these big creators leave for 2 years, but then they come back and they have 30,000 viewers on our platform. And you know, we've saved some money in that process. So I don't want to say that they don't care, because it probably does hurt them. But at the same time, whilst Twitch still has the best feature set, I feel like streamers will naturally go back to them when there isn't a big money offer on the table. I think with this guy's Toast, I saw maybe a clip or something of him saying that he did have an offer from YouTube, but still decided to go to Twitch. So I'd be interested to know the reasoning behind that. But yeah, it does seem like just the lack of communication. And I know I've heard lots of partners who are meant to have like a partner manager and have struggled to keep in contact, and I probably feel some sympathy towards partner managers, because they probably have 1,000 partners now under each manager to try and keep in touch with. So there's the problem with how big Twitch is as a platform versus how many staff there are to look after people. But it certainly seems like these big streamers that YouTube are acquiring are getting direct lines to Fwiz, and, you know, being able to ask about features, because I know that Valkyrie and Courage, they wanted gifted subs, and they worked really hard to bring that, didn't they? gifted memberships, they're called, on YouTube and things like that. So all of this is going to drive YouTube to be a better platform to stream on, because these streamers will be demanding those kind of things. And hopefully once Twitch does start to see viewership dip, maybe because of YouTube, then it's going to be better for us streamers being able to choose between these two platforms. Since Ludwig has streamed, though, I think he's streamed a few times now on YouTube. He has actually had his stream stopped in the middle of a stream for bans 3 times. The one that I saw called out most frequently was him watching the Baby Shark video, and then instantly Baby Shark snapped off Ludwig's head and ended the stream. You don't mess with Baby Shark. It's like DMCA heaven. So yeah, it was interesting that Ludwig's announcement video sketch that he did with one of his colleagues and housemates was ended with this quote of "not in this car," which is basically saying that he can listen to music in YouTube's car. And I was really surprised by that, because surely he's asked about that and hasn't been told that you can just stream whatever you want. Because if anything, the system on YouTube is more advanced. Like, they have this whole automatic scanning of content when you upload footage or when you live stream. So if you're caught, you know, listening to music that you don't own the rights to, you can get pulled down straight away. So I was surprised that this misinformation was in his announcement video. But anyway, he struggled with the first few streams. We even have Fwiz, I thought this was a great tweet, saying, "My son, handshake emoji, Ludwig, and they both agreeing on playing Baby Shark dance when I don't want them to." He's officially been reinstated after some clarification. So we also heard from Ludwig, I think, in this article. I'll read out the quote without the swear word. "Guys, I just realized something big. I actually have to make content on this website. I can't just effing react to things anymore." So yeah, it's going to push him to hopefully be a better content creator. And we heard him talk about in his announcement video that he's going to be able to make higher production things.
Yeah, this is just so funny that, I mean, he's been on there for a week, right? And he's been banned 3 times already. So definitely setting some new records over there on YouTube. And I think it's funny that Fwiz like worked out the whole situation with him, only for him to get banned again twice after that. So I guess it's still a work in progress. And I'm sure, you know, he made the joke about having to make real content. But I'm sure he's got some plans for that already down the line. Just can't watch YouTube videos all the time, I guess.
One thing content I thought was good was the day after he announced his signing, he released a video talking about YouTube removing the dislike count and why it's important. And I was like, this is amazing. Like, straight away calls out the platform for something. Did it in a really interesting way, which is obviously heavily influenced by Thomas Scott's video with the updating view counter. This one was an updating dislike counter. But he summed it up really well, like the whole why we shouldn't be removing the dislike counter. And I know that we covered that in our last pod, but I have to give some credit here. Like, you sign with a huge platform, and then your first video after that is criticizing the platform's biggest controversial decision. What else do we have up here? Oh yeah, and then we had an influx of other streamers sort of announcing things. This tweet from Courage actually did come out straight after our last podcast. I remember talking to you about it over on Discord and being like, this is 100% bait. Like, there is, like, it was way too memey already when he was like, I've got a big announcement tomorrow, and these like purple and red colored doors. But Courage, as I said, announced that he was sticking with YouTube, signed another contract. And Fwiz also tweeted about that. The interesting thing from Fwiz's tweet was, we have much to share in 2022. More live streamers, more product launches, but 2021 isn't over yet. And then the shushing emoji. So will we see another big streamer move in 2021? I mean, this seems to suggest that we will. And we've heard a few quotes from streamers that have talked to each other saying people are going to be shocked by it. So it's time, Ben. Yeah. It's time to lay down your cards. You surely can't be going with the same choice from last time, because...
Man, it's hard now. I don't feel like I have an obvious choice for... Because I don't know the contract situation of who YouTube would want to pull over, but you'd think somebody who makes kind of the programmatic content too, in Ludwig's vein, or something like that, because they've got kind of the group of Tim and Courage and Lupo. And so now Ludwig needs people to collab with as well. He's got Ray, but like maybe someone in like offline TV or OTK, something like that. You know, if they got one of the huge streamers like XQC or Mizkif, that'd be nuts. I don't think it's by one of them. But I don't have like one that comes to mind. I'd love to hear from chat too, if you guys have thoughts about this as well. But I think we'll see one more for the end of the year, at least one more, based on the tweets I've seen so far. Pete, you have any specific predictions here?
Well, I'm going to cheat and have two. In the last prediction that we did, where I predicted Ludwig, some people were kind enough to point out that I actually had two guesses then. I said Ludwig or Lyric. So Lyric is still, by proxy, one of my votes as the next person to come across. But I'm less confident on that than I was about Ludwig. I would say maybe someone like Myth. Again, big audience on YouTube, worked with a lot of brands, has big contacts with Riot, like he co-streams a lot of the Valorant tournaments. Maybe he's not big enough. After these like little leaks that we're hearing from streamers of everyone's going to be surprised, I'm thinking maybe Myth isn't big enough to be that surprising. So we'll have to see, but certainly top 100 streamers. There were a couple of other streamers that came to mind, but Ben, who have you got?
I mean, so looking at chat here a little bit, people saying Lyric, Shroud, Sykkuno. Sykkuno seems possible to me. I think of that group. I feel like Twitch can't let Lyric or Summit go. I feel like they're so endemic to Twitch at this point. It would be huge to lose them on top of Tim and that kind of group. Shroud, I know, is probably signed still, so I can't imagine he's moving, or Ninja, that kind of person. But I don't know. Sykkuno seems relative. So I'll make that my guess. We'll say that for this month. That's my bet.
Well, I'll tell you what. We'll leave chat replay on this live stream of the pod. And then when an announcement comes back, we can come back and verify if any of the people in chat were right. And we can rightly so credit them with a social
That's
media
right.
shout out.
So get your guesses in now.
Exactly. Get your guesses in. A couple of other streamers, though. Let's bring up the screen share again. We mentioned Toast. Announced that he was moving back from Facebook now that his 2-year contract, was it 2-year, 3-year? I think it was around 2 years, had expired. He was going back to Twitch, and he's been pretty successful back on Twitch. We also had this streamer, Rami. I have to apologize. I hadn't actually watched any of his streams before, but I checked out his stats over on Silly Gnome, and he's actually a top 100. He just sneaks into the 100th biggest streamer in terms of average viewer count on Twitch. Has announced that he's going across to Facebook. So there is certainly plenty of discussion from these big platforms discussing when contracts are up with these top 100 streamers and moving between Facebook to Twitch, Twitch to YouTube, Facebook to YouTube, like all in between. I haven't heard of anyone going to Glimish.tv if that is still alive, but everywhere else seems to be offering big money for these big streamers.
Yeah, which is good. I mean, it's great for creators that we're kind of getting this second wave, because I know we had the Ninja and the Shroud era, right? Where that was kind of the big moment when this started, but it felt like it kind of fell back for a little while. We also had, I guess, Ray and Courage. But outside of, it's been like two at a time, it feels like, for big announcements. A couple others like Toast here and there. But this is the first time I've seen a lot of people moving around. So I think that's why I'll keep seeing more of this happening. And the more people that move to YouTube, the more Twitch is going to have to secure some people, right? They can't just lose all their top names. And YouTube has proven that they're willing to spend a lot to bring over creators like that. So I don't think that Twitch can afford to just keep letting people go like they have been so far.
Yeah, the last thing to cover here, because we said that we had a lot of content creators announcing their contracts being up. Valkyrie tweeted, because she signed at a similar time to Courage, remember, my two-year YouTube contract ends on January the 15th, and I still owe them 198 hours before it's over. What do I stream? Who wants to play? What to grind? Anything? I'm desperate. Lol, woo. So not only is she sharing some details of how many hours a month she has to stream, but also very publicly announcing that her two-year YouTube contract ends. I'd be surprised if she signed with anywhere other than YouTube. I think even in a reply to this tweet, Fwiz quotes that the screenshot is in light mode. So he's obviously seeing the funny side of things. So I would be surprised if she goes anywhere else. But interesting to see details of contracts being sent out in tweets.
Yeah, I haven't seen many specific callouts like this of the actual details. And it's funny that she mentions the exact hours required. My guess is that some of the new creators that YouTube have probably don't have as many hours as Ray did, because her contract is older. Because I know that's one of the things specifically that Ludwig joined for, and Tim, is they had less streaming hours than Twitch. But I don't follow Ray as much. Maybe she just has not been streaming and it just built up, and suddenly there's this whole streaming debt that she has to pay off before the end of the year. But cool Subathon. To see the actual details. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I mean, I think that probably sums up what we've been discussing, really, all of these different streamers signing contracts. What I find interesting is I don't hear of this happening in the VOD world, and that is because YouTube doesn't have a competitor when it comes to video on demand. So they don't have to pay the big creators to stay on YouTube. You know, if there was a, if there was a competitor to YouTube, then PewDiePie is probably signing huge deals, isn't he? But because they're quote unquote not the biggest live streaming platform, then these streamers are earning big bucks just by signing exclusive contracts. And obviously Twitch are also offering big contracts to keep people on platform.
Yeah.
In some aspects.
It's super interesting. I love that we have competing platforms like this, because to your point, we don't have that in other spaces. Like Instagram just kind of owns pictures and YouTube owns VOD content. So we don't have the kind of bidding war that we do here. Maybe a little bit of TikTok content. You see some like the incentive programs we talked about with YouTube doing the clips fund, I think, of some kind, where they reward you for doing that. But not like signing $1 million contracts to bring people over, right? So I think it's great. I kind of wish we had more competition for places like YouTube or Instagram, or these giants just own the space, to see more development come out and more platform features to be developed too. Because once you've kind of become the king, you don't really have as much pressure to outperform the other person as much.
Yeah, it's always good for the consumer, in this case, the streamers, when there are big platforms competing with features and money. For your streaming hours. So all good. I think that probably wraps it up, Ben, unless I've missed anything. But really interesting podcast. Always awesome to hear your thoughts on these platform wars and how they battle for the biggest streamers and their attention. There's obviously the other side of the conversation we haven't really covered, which is new streamers and what platforms they should stream to. Does this affect them? But we're certainly going to have videos coming out about those kind of topics on the Gaming Careers YouTube channel. And who knows, maybe if December's a little bit slow news-wise, Ben, we could cover a topic like that as a topic for the podcast in the coming weeks. But I think that probably does it. You want to do the wrap-up for us, Ben?
Yeah, for sure. Anyone who's here, thanks for watching. Make sure to drop a comment in the chat or on social if you have a question for us or a comment, and we'll try and get back to that. And as always, we'll see you next week, I believe, for end of year stuff. We're almost in 2022. It's crazy.
Also, next week, I've just remembered, is episode 50 of this podcast. So yeah, maybe we should try and do something special for that. That milestone being crossed at end of year and episode 50. But yeah, thanks everybody for watching, for joining in the chat. It's really great to see so many people tuning in here every week and listening to us to chat about industry stuff, Mr. Beast videos and all those kind of things. And always great to hear your opinions on them. We'll catch you next week. So see you then. Peace.
See ya.